It's 5:06. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up, Wisconsin musician Chris Plata joins us to share stories from his new CD, Migration Road.
First, Governor Walker's proposed state budget has been one of the biggest stories of the year so far in Wisconsin. The document, weighing in at something in the neighborhood of 1,800 pages, lays out big cuts to the UW system and a $220 million investment in a new arena for the Milwaukee Bucks, among many other things.
But according to our next guest, there's more than just dollars and cents in the budget. A number of non-fiscal policy items have found their way into the proposal, which has some Democratic lawmakers crying foul.
Joining us now with a look at some of these non-fiscal items in the proposed state budget is Bill Leaders. He's the Money and Politics Project Director for the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism. Bill, welcome back to the show.
Good to be here.
So this isn't the first time that non-fiscal policy items, these are ones that don't have a price tag attached to them, I guess. We've seen them in state budgets before. How common of a practice has this been in the past?
Oh, it's been done. When under Governor Doyle, and I presume under earlier governors, there were non-fiscal items that were put into the budget bill. And it's controversial because the budget bill is supposed to be about finances. And when you put in a change in policy that doesn't really have a fiscal implication, some people think that that's not quite following the spirit of the bill. And it's done because it's easier to pass legislation in the budget bill than it is a standalone legislation. Mm-hmm. Back under Governor Doyle, I remember talking to a Democratic lawmaker who put in some language in a bill that was controversial, and I asked him about why it was done in the bill, and he said it was because it couldn't pass otherwise. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't have been able to pass this through the legislature, but if you stick it into the bill, he was able to get it done. And that is the reason that people look askance sometimes at non-fiscal items in the budget bill. When Scott Walker was a candidate for governor in 2010, he made a very unequivocal pledge that he would strip policy and pork items from the budget, pork being earmarks, items that benefit a specific beneficiary. By the time he introduced his first budget in 2011, PolitiFact Wisconsin, which looks at the truth or falsity of political statements, had declared this to be a broken promise because there was both pork items and there were non-fiscal policy items in Governor Walker's first budget. There were some more in his budget in 2013, and there's certainly some in 2015.
Mm-hmm. Do we have a sense of how he stacks up, at least next to previous governors, more or less about the same?
I think it's about the same. It's difficult to call these things precisely because policy is in the eye of the beholder, and governors will argue sometimes that even though something doesn't seem to have a number associated with it, a dollar amount associated with it, there are fiscal implications that if you make a certain policy change, it will benefit the state's bottom line. There'll be a fiscal implication, and therefore it's okay to put in the budget. Probably the best authoritative source for whether something is non-fiscal or not is the Legislative Fiscal Bureau, which for each budget will go through. It hasn't done it for the current budget yet, but it will go through and it will identify items that it feels are, quote, primarily of a non-fiscal nature.
Right. Everybody's watching for that report. I think it may be coming out this afternoon. We'll be talking about that in the future on the show. What were we about to say, Bill?
In 2013, this exercise identified 58 items in the governor's budget, which were non-fiscal policy items. I think the time before that, 2011, it was in the 40s somewhere. So it is something that has recurred. And I tried to get an advance picture of this just by looking at the budget in brief and looking at the executive budget and picking a few things that struck me as non-fiscal. And I got some nominations for this category from Senator Schilling, who is the Senate Minority Leader. She and her staff identified some items that were non-fiscal and that were of concern.
We'll dig into those items in just a moment, but it seems like this is one of those things that when you're on the outside and not in control of the budget, you're mad about these non-fiscal policy items. When you're on the side writing the budget, you put some of them in.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I'm not necessarily saying that, it's not my perspective, that every non-fiscal item in the budget should not be there. I'll just simply note that these are particularly controversial because they are included in a budget bill and they don't have a primarily a fiscal impact. And so people wonder, well, why don't you pass this as standalone legislation? If this is such a good idea, why don't you do it as standalone legislation? But that same argument can be made for other items. For instance, you know, this proposal to dramatically reduce the amount of state support for Wisconsin public radio and television, is somewhat of a policy change. There's a monetary component to it, but it represents a change in state policy. And you could argue maybe this is something that should be considered separately, debated separately, to see, give people an opportunity to weigh in on this, you know, at hearings as a standalone issue rather than toss it into a budget with hundreds and thousands of other things.
Well, let's get into some of these things that critics, in this case, Democratic State Senator Jennifer Schilling, has flagged as solely policy items, things without a real fiscal implication one way or the other. A big one that's gotten some attention, changing the way schools are evaluated.
Yeah, there's in the budget is a call for a change in state and school report cards, how the cards, report cards are formatted. There's changes in school testing in the budget bill. Many of the controversial non-fiscal items have to do with agencies. Like there's agencies that are merging that, you know, the fiscal implication is nil, but it's a significant change in how these agencies operate. Plus, there are changes in how much power agencies have. The biggest examples being the Natural Resources Board, which oversees the State Department of Natural Resources, and the Agriculture Trade and Consumer Protection Board, which oversees DATCAP, the Department of Ag, Trade and Consumer Protection. Both those boards are going to change from being policy-making boards to being strictly advisory. Their power to make policy to pass changes is going to be undercut by action of this budget, if it goes through.
Now, on a practical level, the budget deliberations go on for quite a while, typically, and they'll pick out a piece here and there and focus in on it. But do you think that a policy thing like that, let's say changing the power of both of those boards, removing the power of both of those boards, would it get more debate and more hearings and that sort of thing as standalone legislation? Can it get that as part of a budget too?
Well, I think it can get attention as part of the budget, and maybe it will. Generally speaking, I do think that standalone legislation does receive more scrutiny. There's more opportunity for comment. If you're going to go testify on it, you can testify on it and not on a budget bill that includes so many other things that it's dizzying. But yes, there will be opportunities for people to weigh in, and some of the stuff that is included in the governor's budget isn't going to survive. The Joint Finance Committee will have an opportunity to change the budget dramatically. In fact, the Legislative Fiscal Bureau tends to redo its analysis after the Joint Finance Committee has its weigh-in. Sometimes they actually end up adding non-fiscal items in the process after taking some out.
We're talking with Bill Leaders with the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism, looking at the non-fiscal policy items in Governor Walker's proposed state budget. That's the things without really a price tag. People criticize them more as policy issues that should be dealt with separately, critics say sometimes. And we want to hear from you, too.
What do you think about including non-fiscal policy items in the state budget? Is it necessary in order to get things done, or should the budget only deal with dollars and cents? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're talking about the items in Governor Walker's proposed state budget that don't have anything to do with money, with the taxes or spending that the state does. Non-fiscal items, they're called. Our guest is Bill Leaders. He's Money and Politics Project Director for the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism. He recently wrote a piece about these items. You can join in with your questions and comments at 800-642-1234. Do you think it's okay to roll up policy matters, things like how we evaluate schools and things like that, in this big budget bill? Or do you think they should stand on their own as separate pieces of legislation? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Bill, putting these items, policy items, in the budget. Is it harder, do you think, for members of the public to get involved, to comment on them, than it would be if they were standalone bills on their own?
I think so. I you know, it's much easier to, you know, to address a piece of legislation when it is on its own, it's being considered on its own, where, you know, the people who are speaking are all speaking to the same thing. You get a certain synergy off of it. Both, you know, supporters and opponents will address it. I think the opportunity is always there for people to weigh in on things, but, you know, items get lost in the budget, which is one of the reasons that they are put in the budget, because it's easier to pass them that way. And so, you know, one of the tasks for the citizenry and for the media is to look at the budget for the items that have an impact, that don't necessarily get flagged, that don't necessarily come to attention. And we see just about every day someone calls attention to something new that they found in the budget that will have an implication that, you know, wasn't anticipated or hasn't been heralded. And it's important that these things get noticed, at least.
Now, we listed earlier some of the items that were flagged by a Democratic critic of pieces of this budget. Wanted to get into a couple more of those. Removing lawmakers in the budget from a board of the state's job creation agency. So how would that change things?
Well, the WEDIC, the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, is going to be merged with a new agency. Right now, there are legislators who serve on the board for WEDIC. In the merged agency, the proposal is to have only private sector representatives on this board. It won't be any lawmakers who will serve on the oversight board anymore, which, you know, takes it a step away from taxpayer oversight, that there are not an elective representatives.
Now, there are a lot of items in this particular budget that involve merging some part of the services of different organizations, or merging two departments, as in this case. The argument is maybe this should be in the budget because we're going to try to save money by eliminating these redundancies between different departments.
Yeah, although sometimes the merger doesn't really have much of a physical impact. It's just a change in organization. And then there are things like, you know, there's a proposal, controversial proposal, to do away with the oversight board for for-profit colleges. Right now, for-profit colleges pay a fee for their own regulation. It doesn't cost taxpayers anything. This board provides some mechanism of oversight. And there is controversy over how for-profit colleges operate. Their dropout rate is much greater than other colleges. There are questions about how much of their energy they spend trying to get students as opposed to educating those students. And we do have a board right now that provides some oversight that will be eliminated. Again, these are the type of things that you could say, well, there's going to be a fiscal impact. These colleges won't have to pay anymore. But there's primarily a policy change made away from the oversight board and toward, you know, the free market.
Well, speaking of higher education, one non-fiscal change of the budget that's since been withdrawn got national attention, rewriting via the budget the mission of the UW system.
Oh, yeah. That was probably the biggest, clearly non-fiscal item in the budget, was the proposal to undermine the Wisconsin idea, the search for truth, and you know, the mission statement of the University of Wisconsin system. That drew such a powerful negative reaction that, you know, the governor backed down. There was said it was a mistake, that drafting error, that it was ever included. I mean, people have pointed out that it was deliberately done, and that people had called attention to it and said maybe we shouldn't do this before this blew up into a controversy, and that didn't change things. It was only after this thing became a big raging state and national issue that they backed down from it. So yeah, that's an excellent example of a non-fiscal item that created tremendous concern and controversy.
Now, you've been looking at issues of transparency in Wisconsin government for a long time as a journalist, and now with the Center for Investigative Journalism. You know, this is in plain sight. It's a publicly available budget document, but it's kind of an inscrutable one. Do you think at the heart this is a government transparency issue?
Yes, I do. I think that there needs to be an opportunity for the public to know what is being changed, and there is an opportunity in the budget to obscure that, and it sometimes is not fair.
As you say, previous governors have done this, put these policy items in the budget. The current governor has done this. Do you see this changing? And is it just going to be a voluntary change, I guess, from whoever's writing the budget in the future? Or do you think there might be a systemic change to make this not happen?
Oh, I don't know. I think it bears scrutiny that these items are in the budget. But there's a lot of things in the budget that bear scrutiny. And I do think that probably too much gets done in the budget. I think that's a fair statement. I don't think that is something that is a partisan thing to say, that so much is accomplished in this one bill as opposed to being deliberated and advanced on its merits.
All right, Bill, thanks a lot for being up here today.
Sure.
That was Bill Leaders, Money and Politics Project Director for the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism.
Coming up after the news, musician Chris Plata joins us to share his unique brand of Tex-Mex music and stories from his new CD, Migration Road.
And remember, we're in the midst of our winter membership drive. You can show your support for conversations like these with your pledge of any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Musician Chris Plata is known across the Midwest and, of course, in Wisconsin for his singing and guitar work on tunes ranging from Tex-Mex polkas and country rock to Mexican ballads.
Plata first came to the Midwest as a son of migrant field laborers. He and his family spent grueling hours picking crops like cotton, vegetables, and fruit around the country. Eventually, he settled in Wisconsin, a place he grew to love.
On his new CD called Migration Road, Chris Plata shares stories from his family's life as migrant farmers and the people they met along the way. While the CD will be out later this month, he joins us now in studio for a preview. Chris, welcome back to Central Time.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the title. Why Migration Road?
The title actually came from my wife. She said, well, since you've been to all these places, we think that it would be kind of the journey that you had musically traveling through the U.S. of all the people that you met. So she came up with the title Migration Road.
And does that theme, running with that theme, does it make this CD different than your previous works?
Yes, because basically what I did is I kind of had to go back into my archives, as you as you might say, and try and remember all the musical styles that I was exposed to traveling around the country as a migrant worker, and remembering a lot of the people, and just thinking about some of the musical styles that I heard that I had never encountered before in Texas growing up.
And your love of music comes from family in part, and you've got a song on your new album called Blue Mexican Sky, otherwise known as Mariachi Johnny. And this is an homage to your brother, right?
Yes, my oldest brother was the one that was a musician that played mariachi music, and also he was the one that was very instrumental in teaching me how to play rock and roll music. So I loved my brother, and he passed away just a couple of years ago, so I wanted to just write a song in the mariachi style. I'm not very well versed in mariachi music because it's kind of a odd time signature that they play in. So I wrote the song Blue Mexican Sky and subtitled it Mariachi Johnny.
We've got a little bit of that one now. Let's take a listen.
Yo me fui al rodeo just to see the paseo. Mariachi guitarras and horses with charras, I ride to Durango underneath.
A bit of Mariachi Johnny, otherwise known as Blue Mexican Sky. What images and remembrances of your brother come to life in the song?
Basically that wherever we traveled, we grew up in a ranch, so anytime we had to go anywhere, we usually rode on a horse or had to bring our own guitars and playing at the dances, and also bringing our own tequila.
Well, let's listen to another track. This one, a story I understand about an undocumented worker. Let's listen to a song called Little Eagle from the new CD.
I can tell you about vast fields. I can tell you about wheat fields. I can tell you how hot the sun feels. At the end of a long day, working for short pay, getting nowhere real fast. So
So give us a little of the story behind this one, Chris.
It was back in like 1988 that I read a story of some illegal undocumented workers that came over to the U.S. in a boxcar. And the coyotes who brought them over abandoned them in South Texas, and they suffocated to death. And when they opened the boxcar, one of the agents found a poem in the hand of one of the illegals. And it was a poem that titled that said that he wished that he had never tried to come to America, and that he wished that he had turned himself into an eagle and fly back to Mexico and be free. And I found it very moving, so I decided that I would write a song in the conjunto style, which is native to South Texas. Conjunto is a type of music that's indigenous to South Texas. It's a conglomeration of European music and Mexican music. And so I just decided that I would write this song for this gentleman and kind of just call it Little Eagle because it rhymed with illegal.
Hmm. That's a long time ago that you first heard that story. Why do you think, I mean, obviously it's a very poignant story, but why do you think it stuck with you so much that it became a song so many years later?
Well, I think I wanted to bring it back and tell the people, well, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on right now with immigration and everything, but it's a very difficult lifestyle that these poor people are coming into America, and they're always facing crime and violence and everything, just trying to better themselves to come over. So that struck a chord with me, and then I also wanted to make sure that I used the proper instrumentation in presenting the song, which was the music that I grew up with. Now, I guess they are around here, they call it Tex-Mex, but in South Texas, it's called conjunto music.
And that just hearing those two songs alone, you're going into different musical styles here. Is that a theme throughout the album?
Yes, I basically, that's why we titled it Migration Road, because I wanted to write songs of every place that I had been where there was people that had an influence on me. And like from South Florida, where I heard Rocksteady for the first time, it was like 1964. We worked with a Jamaican workers that are picking tomatoes in Homestead, Florida, and I heard them playing these just fabulous rhythms and singing just these beautiful melodies. And I didn't know at the time that it was rock steady. I just knew that it was something that really stuck in my ear. And I said, oh, I love this musical style. And later on, I decided, oh, I found out that it was something called rock steady, and which later became reggae.
Is it Moonlight Walkabout? Is that the track in that style? Did I have that right?
No, the Moonlight Walkabout is a song that I remember being a kid and not having any money or any audience to sing to, and I would just take my guitar and I would sit in a full moonlight and just sing and listen to all the animals talking back to me, and that was my audience growing up.
Let's give a listen to Moonlight Walkabout. And stylistically, this sounds like, I think, some of the things I've heard from you in the past, more than some of the other ones we've checked out today.
Correct, yes. That's always bleeding through, is that little style.
It's a beautiful one. I love hearing the story behind it. It makes you want to play music in the moonlight.
Oh, it was fabulous. You know, when you're poor and you don't have anything else, singing on a full moonlight, you can't beat that.
And busking for the crickets, I
there
guess.
There you go. And the pumas and all, right. The owls.
Different animals out there.
And the hawks, yeah.
Well, we're going to go out with a final one about monarch butterflies called Goodbye. What do we need to know about this one?
Actually, my wife wrote this song, and we have a little garden that we grow for all the monarchs because they don't have any place to feed anymore. And so one day she just came up and said, hey, I've written this song, and she played me this song, and I'm going like, wow, this is really good. I got to record this.
All right, we've got a little bit. We'll go out with Goodbye.
Sky. You got some
Chris Plata, thank you so much for joining us again in the studio.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
That's a migrant farmer turned musician, Chris Plata, based here in Wisconsin near Columbus, right? And his official CD release of the new project, Migration Road, will be Saturday, March 21st at the High Noon Saloon in Madison. For more info about his music, chrisplata.com.